Morning, birds. I hear you. Birds, today is Earth Day. It's where we live. How about it? So, welcome to Earth. Sorry about the mess. Cat Stevens with a song about the morning. And it is. Morning is broken here. It's Pirate Radio from Chicago. It's 4 after the hour. Today is the 22nd of April. Today is Earth Day. And we will, I was going to say, geez, I don't know what the word is. It's not celebrate. It's kind of like if we had every 4th of July, we had more and more fireworks injuries. But we will commemorate it and we'll observe it and we'll talk about it and all that. Today, a special guest today, I think you've heard about Gorillas in the Mist, things like that, Diane Fossey. We're going to talk to the Gorilla Fund, as it were, and that will be a moment to contemplate the Earth, and that's what we're going to do today. So, you know what, I thought I'd do something we do an irregular feature here called News for 5-Year-Olds. I'm thinking of my granddaughter, who we'll call her Carol Lee. What's Earth Day and what's this all about? Well, tell you what, let's do this. Carol Lee, you listening? So let's get into our imaginary spaceship and we're going to go out into space. You ready? Ooh, all right. Now we're out in space in a rocket ship and we're looking at the Earth. right? Been over to my house. You seen that globe thing? Here it is. Yeah. All right. So that's the way the Earth would look from outer space. Now, down on Earth, we breathe in and out, right? You know that. We breathe in oxygen, and we breathe out carbon dioxide. And those are both gases. Excuse me. Don't do that in front of your parents. So those are two gases, all right? So here's the thing that's going on here. At the top of the Earth, the top of the world, you have some carbon dioxide accumulating from us breathing out. And it's interesting, I should have mentioned that, you know, plants breathe carbon dioxide in and they breathe oxygen out. Are you with me? So we do the opposite. The whole thing is called an ecosystem. And that's a word that kind of means that we're all in this sort of big club together, all the forces of nature. All right, so back to what's happening at the top of the Earth. The carbon dioxide accumulates up there, and generally that's a good thing because it keeps the heat of the Earth in. So, you know, it's like what they call a greenhouse. You've seen a greenhouse? It's those big glass building where they grow plants and things. And that's generally a good idea, you know, see, because it keeps us kind of warm and it makes the plants nice and healthy and all that's good. But what happened, see, a while ago was, well, it really started maybe 150 years ago. People started burning more coal. You seen coal? They started using oil because I know we're going to have machines and gasoline, all that stuff is going on. And what happened was when we started doing that here on Earth, that made more and more and more carbon dioxide. So all of that is up at the top of the Earth now. And the problem is it's too hot. See, you need like a window up there. Normally there is kind of a window. Yeah, you kind of open it up and it doesn't, you know, if you said, wow, it's hot in here, go up in the window. All right, we'd like to do that. That's called global warming. And some people who you might run into who aren't not very informed, Carolee, will tell you that's all a hoax. A hoax means a lie. It's not a lie. It's a real thing. And we know that. See, because 150 years ago, we started taking the temperature. You know, is it hot outside? Is it cold outside? We started measuring the temperature all over the world. And since then, the temperature has gone up every year. So we know that that's not a good thing. That's how we know it's not a hoax. Man, what are we going to do about all this? Well, one thing we're going to do is we're going to get together and we're going to agree with other countries that we should reduce the what they call emissions, the bad gases. And we were doing that. We were part of a big club called the Paris Agreement. Right. Okay. What that meant was that we had like 195 nations. That's almost everybody. We agreed that we were going to try to, you know, have less bad gases going into the atmosphere. And, well, we were doing that. And then we had a president, not the current one, not President Biden, the one before him with the orange hair. For some reason, he decided to pull us out of that club. And that wasn't a good thing. But we're back in the club. All right, Carolee, you got it? So global warming is when it gets hot all over the world. And the ecosystem is when we're all working together. And Earth Day is when we try to figure out what happened there and how we can make it better. So today, President Biden is going to make an announcement today. We're going to have a virtual summit on climate change with 40 world leaders. That target proclaims Americans' return to a position of leadership on climate change, and it urges other countries to make steep cuts. Carolee, President Biden, we can only do that if we stop using so much oil and gas and coal. All right, so when you go to school later and they say, what's Earth Day? You'll know, all right? I tell you something, there's even a song for Earth Day. You believe it? Yeah. Written by an Indian poet whose name is Abhay Kumar. You ready? This is the Earth Day Anthem.
A brand new way, a guardian of the earth and sky above, my life given to what I can be proud of, a
it here first. I never heard that before. That's the Earth Day Anthem. And it is Earth Day. Written by Indian poet Abhay Kumar on Pirate Radio from Chicago. And welcome in here. Today is, in fact, Earth Day. You know, I hate to sound like Forrest Gump. I remember the first Earth Day. I was in college. This is the 51st. The first one was in 1970. I have the following facts. See how they match up here. Earth Day inspired by Vietnam War protesters. That was true. Started in 1970 by a Wisconsin senator named Gaylord Nelson. He noticed that people were out protesting the Vietnam War. I was sleeping through the protest. I just couldn't. Anyway, he thought that this was an interesting mechanic, and he wondered why we were putting pressure on the government about the war and not about all the damage being done with the oil spills and pesticides and smog, stuff like that. So anyway, they chose the day's date intentionally to appeal to college students. The idea fell between the spring break and final exams. It says here 20 million Americans celebrated the first Earth Day in 1970. Wow, I don't know. I don't even know what that means. I was vaguely aware of it. Maybe so. The EPA, that's the Environmental Protection Agency, was approved by President Nixon in 1970. The evildoer of our generation, but he did some good things, and that was one of them. Everybody can participate in Earth Day. Anybody, you can clean up your community, plant a tree. Reduce waste. All those are things. Every Earth Day has a theme. This year, it is Restore Our Earth. And can I a little bit of an editorial comment here? If you listen to, some group of politicians, Republicans, the idea that there's some odd sort of ephemeral, we don't got to worry about it, disconnect between global change and the economy. All right, how about this? Climate change could cut the world economy by $23 trillion by 2050. All right? It's going to get expensive. So let's know that that's going on here. 18 after the hour. Let's see here. I had something for you. Oh, I know what it was. Jack Nicholson's birthday. Did you see As Good As It Gets?
I need this. Just say, Melvin, I'll try, okay?
Melvin, I'll try.
Thank you. That's good.
Now, on a pleasanter note, my son, he just got accepted to Brown. My husband was dying.
Good, nice, thrilled, exciting. You don't have to wait with me.
I can't resist. You usually move through here so quickly, and I just have so many questions I want to ask you. You have no idea what your work means to me.
What does it mean to you?
That somebody out there knows what it's like to be in here.
Oh, God, this is like a nightmare.
Oh, come on, just a couple of questions. How hard is that? How do you write women so well?
I think of a man, and I take away reason and accountability.
Johannesburg. way. And everybody starts to move as soon as Pata Pata starts to play.
Thinking of Africa, because we're going to talk about gorillas before the end of the hour here. That is Miriam Makeba from South Africa in a song called Pata Pata. Here on Pirate Radio from Chicago, where it is 22 after the hour. And Aaron Mittens, the news baron, joins us. Morning, Aaron. There he is.
Good morning.
How are you?
Doing pretty good. How are you?
Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day.
I don't know what that means, but we'd be, it's like, yeah, something. We need another.
Now it's
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, it's Earth One now.
So you and I both saw the story, and I don't know why, apparently no one else did. Scientists created a human monkey embryo. What happened?
Yes, and I think the main reason this didn't get a lot of press is because they luckily stopped at the embryo, but we'll see in the coming years. But so this is a statement by the head of the team who did this. It's a joint team of American and Chinese scientists. Juan Carlos Belmonte, the head of the team at Salk Institute in California. Quote, "Our goal is not to generate any new organism, any monster, and we are not doing anything like that, apparently. We are trying to understand how cells from different organisms communicate with one another." So basically they've been working on this for a few years, and they finally got an embryo, and they stopped at that point, of monkey human genes, and they hope to use this tech to grow organs for transplant patients. But who knows what the American military would do?
I can't imagine that the minute some other people hear about this, they're gonna freak out, because it is kind of Frankenstein oriented, right? I mean, let's acknowledge that.
For sure. I mean, there was a whole, like, I remember I was in high school, and we had to have this whole debate in class about, what was it, stem cell research.
Yeah, sure.
With human stem cells. That's now right. We're talking about human monkey embryos, and no one's talking about it.
Yeah.
So it's a huge sensitivity shift in this realm. But I can imagine the religious people are going to get on this.
You think? We have a primatologist coming up. I'm going to have to ask her about this. I'm sure she'll have a... You love a take about that. Wow. All right. Does the embryo have a name?
No, it does not. But actually, there's a history of this. There was the Humanzi that was in the Ringling Brothers circuit. It was a monkey that kind of looked like a human. There was theories that was an actual hybrid there. But who knows? This is probably the first.
Wow. The Humanzi.
Yes, the Humanzi.
Okay.
I got to see you picture this one.
All right. Speaking of the future here, which we appear to be living in, Elon Musk declared himself the tech knocking of Tesla. I don't even know what that is.
The Techno King.
Techno. Oh, the Techno King. Jeez. We need to rehearse this. So what does that mean?
Honestly, I have no clue. But yeah. So in the FEC filing last month, this is the quote. Effective as of March 15th, 2021, the titles of Elon Musk and Zach Kirkhorn have changed to Techno King of Tesla and Master of Coin, respectively.
These people live in a board game.
Yes, exactly. Right, okay. Yes.
Moving on, TikTok got hit with $1.6 billion lawsuit. What did they do?
Yeah, so this is going back to the whole privacy conversation we had back a few months ago. So basically, this is a London law office that's making a class action suit against TikTok and they're a subsidiary of ByteDance, so their overarching umbrella corporation. Uh-huh. Basically, it's alleging that every child that has used TikTok since May 25th, 2018 may have had private information illegally collected by ByteDance. So everything from biometric data, their exact location, phone numbers, videos, you know, et cetera.
All right. That bears more than a class action lawsuit. We gotta know more about that. True. Okay. And finally, wow. I was explaining oxygen and carbon dioxide, or attempting to do that to my granddaughter. NASA, yeah, is this true? They extracted breathable oxygen from the Martian air.
Yes, 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 they did. So as we were talking about yesterday, so the Martian atmosphere actually found a specific number. It's 1% as thick as it is here on Earth, but they still found a way to get some oxygen out of it. So this is the MOXIE unit, which stands for something neither of us really care about, but it stands for some very long words. But it's a toaster-sized instrument that converts carbon dioxide into oxygen. But it ran for a few minutes. It only produced about 5 grams of oxygen, so about 10 minutes of breathable air. But they're going to use this to make fuel for rockets. So an average rocket to get back off of Mars is going to need about 25 metric tons. Uh-huh. And 4 astronauts on the surface will use about a metric ton during that time. So it's a lot easier to send this little toaster, sit it there for a year, and they could pump out all the oxygen they would need instead of bringing it with them to take back.
Aaron Minton's the science baron. The size of a toaster.
Mm-hmm. About the size of a toaster, yes.
You are Mr. Wizard. You are bringing it home. Jeez. See you later.
All right, see ya.
A man walks down the street. He says, why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot of redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, dogs in the moonlight. Far away, my well-lit door. Mr. Beer belly, get these mutts away from me, you know. I don't find this stuff amusing anymore. If you be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty. Betty, when you call me, you can call me out. A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention, and oh, my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone, gone? He ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. All along, along, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty, and Betty, when you call me, you can call me out, call me out. Mm-hmm.
Paul Simon, another African-inspired song from that Graceland LP. At 32 after the hour here, it's Pirate Radio from Chicago. Gary Lee Wright, and we're talking about African things and things like that. Diane Fossey, you know Diane Fossey? The Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund. It's a charity for the protection of endangered mountain gorillas. It was created in 1978. Digit was named after a gorilla, an actual gorilla. And we're going to talk about this organization with Dr., I hope I can get this right, Tara Stuwinski, who is not only the CEO, but the chief scientific officer for the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund. Dr. Stuwinski, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, and happy Earth Day.
Yeah, you as well. You as well. I noticed that there are a whole lot of, almost every company, I should say, has a CEO. But in addition to that, you're also the chief scientific officer for the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund. Talk about that for a second.
Yeah, I actually started my career as a scientist. I still like to consider myself a scientist, although I spend less time doing science now than I used to. But I originally worked with this organization in a scientific role. I'm a primatologist. I've studied gorillas for more than 26 years. And then about 7 years ago, moved into the leadership position of running the organization.
What do we know about gorillas? What do we learn? You said over 20 years. What was surprising and why? What do we learn?
Gorillas are surprising us every day still after we've been studying them now for more than 50 years. So Diane Fossey, who you referenced earlier, originally went to Africa in 1967 to study gorillas. And at that point, we really knew nothing about them. And, I think one of her biggest legacies is that she changed public perception of gorillas. So she went in and was the first person to really get to know gorillas as individuals, to study individual families and the members. And she showed that they have, they share a lot of what we think of as, our human characteristics. They live in very tightly bonded societies. They support their most vulnerable. They grieve their dead. They have, relationships that can last for decades. And, before her work, a lot of people thought of gorillas as kind of King Kong ferocious beasts. And their nickname now is Gentle Giant because really, they are. They're very gentle, peaceful animals, particularly compared to chimpanzees, which are another, our closest living relative.
Ms. Fossey studied at the Karasoki Research Center in the Virunga volcanoes of Rwanda. I'm reading here. This is a story beyond belief. They were executing these gorillas and turning them into ashtrays and tourist items.
Yeah.
Just horrible, horrible stuff. Anyway, the Digit Fund was founded back in 1978 for the purpose of anti-poaching. So let's go back and talk about what you are doing. You're trying to raise money, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did last year with gorillas, what are we doing next year with gorillas? What's on the horizon?
Yeah, I think, you brought up a great point. I mentioned Diane Fossey originally went there to study the gorillas, but she quickly saw that if she didn't take action, there wouldn't be gorillas left to study. The population where she worked was down to 250 individuals, and this was largely a result of poaching. People were poaching gorillas to make, ashtrays out of their hands or to try and get babies for the pet trade. And so she started the Digit Fund when her favorite gorilla, Digit, was killed by poachers defending his family. And that organization later changed to the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund. Diane died in 1985. She was killed at her research center in Rwanda, and the organization's name was changed. So we are her original organization that she started more than 53 years ago now. And so we continue that work. And the great news is that while Diane thought mountain gorillas would likely be extinct by the year 2000, they are actually the only great ape on the planet that is increasing in number. And that's largely a result of, the conservation efforts that she started that have been continued by the governments. Mountain gorillas are only found in three countries, Rwanda, Uganda, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. And the big difference between now and when Diane was there is that the governments are very strongly involved in conserving the gorillas. They lead the conservation efforts in their countries, and we're obviously there to help support them. But there's only 1,000 of them left on the planet. So while the good news is their numbers are slowly increasing, they still remain a very at-risk and conservation species. So to get to your question, you know, we still need to be in the forest protecting them every single day, which is what my organization does. We help protect about half of the gorilla families that live in Rwanda, which means that we have trackers that are out in the forest every day. They check on every individual. We know them each individually, make sure they're there, make sure they're not ill or injured. If someone's missing, we organize a patrol to go find them to make sure they haven't been caught in a snare. Luckily, people don't hunt mountain gorillas anymore, but snares are set for other animals in the forest, and a snare is just basically like a trap that the gorillas can get caught in, and it can injure them or even cause death. So we are still on the ground 365 days a year protecting gorillas and their families. And this year has been a particularly challenging one because gorillas share 98% of our DNA. So guess what that means that they can get? COVID-19.
Wow. Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yes. So we have, in fact, respiratory illness is a significant cause of death in gorillas, and a lot of it is human respiratory illness. So things that can make us just a little bit sick can be deadly in the gorillas because they just don't have the immunity to it. So we've had to really change our practices to make sure that we're still protecting the gorillas every day, but that we're not in any way risking transmitting COVID-19 to them.
This is Dr. Tara Stowinski. She is the CEO and CSO, Chief Scientific Officer of the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund. And Dr. Tara, we talk about talking to animals here on the show. I talk to the birds in the morning, and we have been fascinated with some of the things that we're learning about dogs and the way they communicate. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that people know. Geez, I I'm an animal rights guy would really exaggerate my knowledge. But I saw a video, for example, recently of elephants who actually have kind of a funeral procession. You would know this.
Uh-huh.
When an elephant dies, the elephants gather around them, much as humans do. And back to gorillas, the idea that these animals are so close to humans, it's stunning and it's staggering.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
It's just funny that you brought this up because, like, as I've been talking to you, my dog came and sat down next to me and is looking at me, and I'm sure he's, you know, wishing me good luck here on my interview. animals are just incredible, and I think they really, dogs in particular, they can really sense, they have a keen sense for what their human counterparts are thinking and doing. But with the gorillas, it's true. I mean, again, they share 98% of our DNA. It really shouldn't be that surprising to us that they have incredibly complex, social structures and intelligence. And just a couple of stories I can tell you, Gary. You know, one is we actually just recently published a paper on what happens to gorillas if they lose their mothers before, you know, so after they're weaned, so they can eat, they're nutritionally independent, but they wouldn't normally be on their own. You know, it might be the same as a 5 or 6 year old human who lost their moms. And amazingly, what we found is that these individuals, in a lot of animals, these individuals who lose their mom have a really negative outcome. They don't live as long. Their reproduction is not as good. We don't see that in gorillas. And what we found is it really seems to be the family, this close family structure, where the other members of the family come in and support these orphans. They're often adopted, you know, by the silverback.
Wow.
So in the sense that they will go and they'll sleep with the silverback at night. They'll have access to him. And he's the dominant male in the group. So you can imagine if you're a little guy, and you have, and your best buddy is now the dominant male, it means that you're not going to get shut out. You're not going to get isolated. You're not going to get cut off from resources. So that was a really amazing finding of how, you know, just like in humans, it takes a village to raise a child, it's the same thing in gorillas. And then in terms of their intelligence, you know, most of the ways we see how smart they are is in these complex social interactions, but we occasionally get these extra glimpses, and a lot of it is around what we mentioned earlier, our snares. So the gorillas are very snare aware, and they will destroy them, particularly the silverbacks, if they see them. But one of my favorite stories is that of a male called Cantsby. He was actually named by Diane Fossey because she thought his mom was a male. So when she showed up one day and this male had given birth, she said, well, this can't be. And so Kantz got his name. And he is a very famous gorilla for a lot of reasons. He set a lot of records. But one day, one of our field assistants was watching him. And every time a kid would walk up to Kantzby, a lot of times these males will babysit. They'll have like five or six kids around them, and the females are foraging. And every time one of these infant gorillas would walk up to him, he would pig grunt, which is a mildly, you know, aggressive vocalization. It sounds like, and basically it's just a warning. And so the kids gave him a really wide berth and wouldn't go near him. And the researcher was like, this is very odd behavior. So she tried to get a little bit closer to see what was going on, and he did the same thing to her. And so she thought, well, maybe he's not feeling well. She kind of backed off. And this went on for a while, and then when the group moved on, she went to follow him, and what she found was he was sitting next to a snare. And so effectively, by doing this vocalization, he kept all of these infants away from that snare, and she also felt that he was keeping her away. Like, when he aggressively vocalized at her, he also kept her away from that snare as well. So, you know, it's just amazing when we look at the way, again, they care for each other. They grieve. We've published a paper looking at how gorillas grieve, and they show, you know, grief in very similar ways that you mentioned with elephants and humans. And then also their incredible intelligence. And that's why, to me, protecting them is so important. You know, protecting all wildlife is important. But I think people can really make connections with gorillas because they're so like us. And when you protect a gorilla, you're then protecting a whole forest ecosystem that the gorillas rely on, and lots of other animals and plant species that are found there.
You know, I hate to appear crazy, but I think we can learn things from animals in ways that we should. That males can care for children.
Definitely.
I mean, that's definitely. Yeah. The idea of warning. I think people in general know that animals. Some animals, I appear to know more than I do. I don't even know what animals I'm talking about. That can sense rain coming on, with the. I'm assuming that's because the air pressure changes.
Uh-huh.
For example, they're tuned into things that humans are not. And that story you told me about the snare. Wow. I just saw this, it's quarter before the hour here. It's Pirate Radio from Chicago. I just saw this come over the wire here. This would be of interest to you, I think. Spain is going to give pets the same legal status as humans in the new era here. I think that's a pretty interesting thing. I think that's a big deal. We need to sort of figure out why we have mistreated these animals that way. So,
I think a really important point, like when we consider the situation that we're in right now with this global pandemic, I mean, people that work in my field, we have known, this is not a surprise to anyone that we're in this situation. And it's really because of the imbalance that we have with nature. You know, a lot of these zoonotics like COVID-19, like HIV, they have jumped from animals to humans. And that's because we're destroying natural habitats. So by keeping nature intact, by keeping ecosystems intact, we're actually protecting and helping ourselves, whether it be, you know, preventing the next global pandemic, or when it comes to things like climate change. You know, one of the things we talk about with gorillas is gorillas live in the second largest tropical rainforest left on this planet. And it is one of our best natural defenses against climate change, because what do trees do? They take in carbon dioxide, which is a greenhouse gas. So ultimately, if you protect gorillas and you protect this forest, you're protecting yourself and our planet. So it goes much beyond, like, you know, for me, I love gorillas. I love animals. My whole life has revolved around animals. I think they have an intrinsic place on this planet. But if it's maybe not so much your interest, you can also see that by protecting wildlife and keeping these wild places intact, we're actually protecting our own species.
Yeah. What's your dog's name?
His name, I have two. The one that was here is named Ollie, and then he's a puppy, and then he's not quite a COVID-19 puppy. We got him right before the right before the lockdown, and then I have a 11-and-a-half-year-old named Prince.
Wow.
They're awesome.
You are Dr. Doolittle.
I certainly was as a kid. Now I just have the two dogs, but yes, as a child, I was really lucky to spend a lot of time around animals, which I think is what really fostered my interest in working with them and helping to save them.
Dr. Tara Stowinski is the CEO and CSO, Chief scientific officer of the Dian Fossey Gorilla Fund. And let me just pull the trigger on, I think it's gorillafund.org, is it not, Doctor?
It is. Gorillafund.org is our website. I would love for people to check it out and also follow us on social media at Saving Gorillas. I mean, these stories that I was telling you about Canspi and about the orphans, all of this, you know, we're with these gorillas every single day. We post every day what's happening in the field. So it's a great way to just keep up with the gorillas themselves and also the incredible work that the team on the ground is doing. You know, they really are true conservation heroes. They're the front line of conservation. They're out there every day doing very hard work to make sure that gorillas remain on this planet and then all the wildlife that shares the gorillas forest home.
You know, we like to have scientists on the show here, and I guess because I dropped out of college, I'm trying to catch up. I'm getting by osmosis. Anyway, you know, we want a spotlight. You said at the beginning you started as a scientist, but this is an admirable thing to choose. And I hope that we get more. I think we need more scientists and fewer actuaries, but we'll see what this do. Anyway, it's gorillafund.org, gorillafund.org, standard spelling. What's the Twitter handle at Saving Gorillas?
At Saving Gorillas, okay. With two G's.
Good.
Saving Gorillas.
Good.
Our motto is helping people, saving gorillas. We've talked a lot about the saving gorillas part. We also realize that for conservation to work, we have to be uplifting local communities. So that's a big part of our work as well. And you can see all of that if you go to our website or visit us on social media.
Please come back again.
Would love to. Thank you so much for having me. And again, happy Earth Day.
As well. And tell your dogs I said arf.
I will. I'm very surprised they haven't barked during this. They've been very well behaved.
They are well. You know, they pay attention when the master speaks. Dr. Tara, thank you. Have a good day today.
Thanks again, Gary.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit lonely and you're never coming around.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit tired of listening to the sound of my tears.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit nervous that the best of all the years have gone by.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit terrified and then I see the look in your eyes.
Turn around.
Nothing I can say, a total eclipse of the heart. A total eclipse of the heart. A total eclipse of the heart.
Bonnie Tyler. Bonnie Tyler recorded that song. You know her. You know her work. You probably don't know the guy who wrote that passed away a couple of days ago. I always jump at a chance to credit songwriters. We know their stuff. Jim Steinman wrote that song. He passed away a couple of days ago. In addition to writing that song, he wrote most of the Meatloaf stuff, the Bat Out of Hell album. I wrote for Barbara Streisand, on and on and on. Anyway, Jim Steinman. Let's say something. Say something good about him. At 6:06 here on Pirate Radio from Chicago. It's the 22nd of April. This is Earth Day. As I mentioned, talking to Dr. Stawinski, I thought this was notable. Spain has given pets the same legal status as humans, in a sign of growing support for animal rights in the home of bullfighting, it says here from the news wire. Domestic animals are going to be considered living beings under Spanish law instead of mere objects, as has been the case until now. It's going to mean that dogs or cats must be considered in the same way as children in divorce hearings. Get this. I'm looking, wait a minute, hang on. Or when inheritances or debts have to be settled by the courts. You ever lost a pet in a divorce? I know. When judges decide who should have the family dog, they must also consider the welfare of the animal as they would if they were dealing with children. Shared custody of the pet. I'm telling you, this is breakthrough law here. Shared custody of the pet is going to be an option open to judges in divorce hearings, who must also decide who pays for vet bills and food of the animal. All right, here's how this works in Spain. 49.3% of Spanish homes have a pet, but the country also has the fourth highest rate of divorce in Europe. So, yeah. Under the new law, mistreatment of pets will also be regarded as a crime, as if the owner had abused another person. So, wow. Spain joins France, Germany, Austria, and Portugal, which are the other European countries which have given pets the same legal status. All right. Thus endeth Earth Day, which was produced in Chicago by Natasha Rodriguez.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. Much more than myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.